Okay, I will speak very slowly. I was just thinking, my first conference presentation I ever gave, I remember, was at Allerton. And I remember, I spent the whole session hammering, all of the speakers with questions, and my presentation was at the end. And then, of course, after my presentation, they all hammered me together. So my plan is I'm going to speak the whole time, go 5 minutes extra, there'll be no time for questions, and then I'll leave very quickly. Anyway, so I guess we'll go ahead and get started here. Being a professor, I can basically fill in whatever time is required. I have 50 backup slides, so I can do this in an hour. I can do it in 20 minutes. I can do it in five. So this is joint work with my PhD student, Takao Inoue. He's at National Instruments now, and this is work that he did for his PhD actually about a year ago. It's something about when students graduate, it becomes a lot harder to get them to actually submit the work on time for some reason. I'm glad to be here presenting it here. So the title is Grassmannian Predictive Coding for Limited Feedback Multi-User MIMO Systems. And I'm glad about especially the previous presentation, because it gives me a nice introduction that I was expecting to get in this session, so I don't have to tell you what is multi-user MIMO, et cetera. So the system that I'm going to consider in this talk is it's a multi-user MIMO communication system with limited feedback. I'm going to make the main assumption that I guess we just found out in the previous talk wasn't good, which is I'm going to assume that the quality information is perfect, and I'm going to focus on quantizing the direction information. And so the multi-user MIMO setup is we're going to do, in our case, we're going to do zero forcing pre-coding at the transmitter. We have a single receive antenna. The objective at each user is we're going to quantize that direction vector. We're going to send it back over the limited feedback link. We're going to put all those together, design the transit beamformers, and everything works, just like in the previous talk here. And so this is the setup that we're considering. And the basic challenges here is as follows here. So if you've been following the field for a long time, you know that when we started off doing this with single-user beamforming, we were looking at code books on the order of 3, 4, 5, 6 bits for up to 4 antennas. And 3GPP ended up taking 4 bits. So you don't need that much feedback. It's great. Now, the problem is, leveraging this work by Jindal, you find out that, generally speaking, to achieve a constant gap from performance with the optimum, the sum rate that you achieve with perfect channel state information, you need to have a code book that scales with the number of users, and it also scales with the SNR. So the implication here is that you tend to need higher resolution. Otherwise, you're going to be interference limited, and exactly like that was the nice plot before. At some point at high SNR, you don't want to do multi-user MIMO at all. And the reason is that we don't have enough resolution. You become quantization interference limited, and performance is a problem. And then we're also seeing this right now in base station coordination, where people are applying multi-user MIMO to distributed antenna settings, and we need just as much feedback there, if not more. So the main thing here is that as we look at more sophisticated transmission techniques, we really need higher code books. We need bigger code books, and that becomes a problem because we have more feedback. So some of the other issues here is that in addition to quantization, we also have delay and mobility. If you have a large code book size, the channel is mobile, you have to send a lot of bits back very quickly. So that means the net feedback rate of that link is very high. So, unfortunately, the transmitter is not well informed about the channel, and this is a problem. So what we're going to propose is a predictive coding framework that will allow us to take advantage of correlation in the channel so that when the channel is not moving very quickly, we can get effectively larger code book sizes than we otherwise would have. So I'll explain a little bit about the key idea, and then I'll mention some prior work. So the predictive coding concept, anyone working in source coding, this would be probably the first thing that you would do, and the idea is as follows here. It's basically, if you have a source that's correlated over time, what you do is you find yourself a good predictor. This might be a MMSE predictor, for example, or if you have a favorite, you could plug it in. And you use that predictor to predict the next value of the source. And then instead of quantizing the new value of the source, you quantize the error between the predicted value of the source and the source that comes in. This is used with great success in speech and image. This is used all over the place. And the main things you need here, you need a predictor. You need to be able to quantize the error. You need to be able to compute the difference between the predicted and the true. and then you need to be able to track your predicted sequence. And then the decoder, essentially what it does is it also implements this predictor, so it takes the quantized error updates and then it keeps implementing the prediction, and that gives it's you keep updating the decoder over time. And so, for example, with a traditional, like if you use like a first order one step predictor, you might have two weights here and you take a linear combination of the previous two symbols, that becomes your predicted value, and you know, you can optimize those weights using MMSE. And then if you wanted to design the code book, probably the typical way to do this is with the Lloyd algorithm. There's also a lot of structure techniques, tree structure and so on. And this is known, it's widely deployed. I mean, people have been doing this for at least 20, 30 years. So the problem here is that as follows. In the limited feedback beamforming case, the information that we want to quantize, that normalized vector, a normalized vector is phase invariant, it's actually represented by a point on the Grassmann manifold. In this case, the space of beamforming vectors are considered to be points on like Gn, 1. So this is the set of subspaces of in n-dimensional space with one dimension. And you can write it like points on a sphere. That's more of an illustration. It's not exactly correct, but it gives you kind of the idea here. And so if effectively the problem that we have with limited feedback beamforming is that we want to do predictive quantization of a source that lives on this manifold. And so that's the basic idea. Now let's figure out what the problem is. I mean, why are we talking about this now after we've been doing limited feedback for 8 or 9 years now? Well, the problem is as follows here. So first of all, we have a subspace source that's going into our predictive encoder, and we need to generate the error. And the problem with working on the manifold, especially the Grassmann manifold here, is that simple operations like adding up two points, not necessarily well defined. So like, for example, if I'm looking at those two lines there, what does it mean to add those two lines up? You get another line, or if you're adding points on a sphere, you get a point that's not on the sphere once you're done, if you add them in Euclidean space. So you need to do something special just to add these things up. So the net of that is that generating the concept of an error, it's actually not obvious. Well, you also need to predict things on the subspace. I mean, if you really want to take this manifold structure into account, we shouldn't be predicting Euclidean space, we should be predicting on this manifold itself. So we need a manifold predictor, but then what is an MMSE manifold predictor? I mean, what is multiplying, what is weights? I mean, all of these things, they're not very well defined. And so that's why it's been very hard to come up with even, you know, extremely simple examples of doing predictive coding here, is because these operations are hard. And so what that means is that in the predictive coder, the generating the error is not straightforward, quantizing the error is not straightforward, predicting the sequence is not straightforward, and updating the predictor is not straightforward. And so each of these proposed blocks, you need to have something new here. And so there has been a lot of work on this. I mean, certainly in my group and others, I mean, everybody wants to exploit the temporal correlation in the channel. I mean, it's the right thing to do. I mean, we know that multi-JMIMO doesn't work well if the channel's varying quickly, and, you know, there's temporal correlation. It's just sitting there begging to be exploited. So we've been trying to do that. I mean, probably the earliest work, this is Bannister and Zeidler in, 2002, and they had some nice papers with gradient-based updates. There's some dynamic codebook approaches where you kind of adaptively select a subset of a codebook depending on how fast the channel is moving. If it's very slow, you end up with a very directional codebook for correlation, and if it's going fast, you end up with kind of a Grassmannian codebook. There's these progressive or successive refinement techniques where you zoom in on the channel estimate depending on how fast or slow it's going. That's more like a tree kind of quantization. There has been some work using Euclidean prediction, so you could use a Euclidean predictor and quantize it. And depending on how you do it, sometimes that can actually work very well, but sometimes you lose the phase invariance, all the structure that we were trying to exploit in the Grassmann manifold in the first place. So that can be a problem. Probably the best approach I've seen is a differential approach by Kim et al. And this is related to something that they've actually proposed in the 3GPP standard, where it's essentially you look at a difference between the last vector and the next vector here. And that approach works reasonably well, but it doesn't really use anything stochastic. And then there's also some rate compression techniques. So, I mean, the main message here is, I mean, there's definitely like a lot of work on this topic, but there's not really a comprehensive framework for solving the problem that I just told you about, doing predictive quantization on the Grassmann manifold. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to tell you about our approach to solving this problem. And unfortunately, we don't have a general solution. I mean, the general solution with, you know, general manifolds and many points is still an open problem. I'm going to tell you about the solution that we have, that we're proposing for the case where we have 2 points. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to explain some of the mathematical concepts that we need to use. I've got the key equations here, but I'm going to really focus on the picture, because the point is to get the intuition of what's happening in the picture, and then I'll explain to you how we put it together. So in operating on in these kinds of manifolds here, you can define several concepts. One of them is this notion of a tangent vector. So this tangent vector, so if I have 2 points, x1 and x2, that live on the manifold here, I can define a tangent vector, which I'm writing e12, which is a vector that's pointing in the direction of x2 from x1, and it's orthogonal to x1. And remember, x1 is a point on the Grassmann manifold. We can represent it as a unit vector. So E is a vector that's orthogonal to x1, but it's not unit vector. It has a length. Its length is dependent on the chordal distance between x1 and x2. And you can go through, there's some nice papers by Edelman and Smith that have some very general descriptions of the notions of tangents and geodesics, but those are, if you look through it, you'll find that because everything is so general, it's actually very hard to pick it out. And so one of the contributions here is that we simplified everything down for the beamforming case, and it turns out that the equations simplify dramatically. And there is actually a lot of intuition in the equations. I won't go through it all. But basically, the tangent vector here, you can decompose it into two pieces. One, which has to do with the length, which is the arc length between x1 and x2. The second, which is the unit tangent direction. And then this is a function of the inner product between x1 and x2, and it's a function of the chordal distance. And so we're going to use the tangent vector to give us a equivalent notion of error. Okay, so the second concept we need is this geodesic. So geodesic, this is the curve that's between x1 and x2. It's the shortest path between these 2 points. You can come up with an equation for that curve that's a function of, you can write it as a function of x1 and x2, but it becomes more convenient to write it as a function of x1 and the tangent vector. So you can write it like this here. You've actually got x1 times the cosine of this thing plus the sine of this thing. And the t equals 0 gives you x1, t equals 1 gives you x2. And it turns out that this and this are orthogonal. You can see that because if you remember that the tangent vector is orthogonal to x1. So you have this nice orthogonal decomposition. So we're going to use this geodesic to give us something that looks like an addition. Now, the third thing that we need is we want to predict. So we want to try to figure out where the sequence of points on the Grassmann manifold is going. And so we want to get some function that's got some parameter we can optimize over it. And so for this work, what we did is we're going to do something very simple. We're going to use this concept of parallel transport. So parallel transport is essentially a way of taking this tangent vector at x1 and mapping it over to x2. But remember that the tangent vector has to be orthogonal to the point. So you have to do this mapping in such a way that the orthogonality is maintained to the new vector here. And so you can do that, and it turns out that it actually looks something like the negative of the previous tangent vector here. And so we're going to use the parallel transport concept to define a predicted value. Okay, so now I'm going to explain how we use these mathematical operations to do Grassmannian predictive quantization. So the first thing here is let's generate an error. Let's suppose we have a predicted sequence. The predicted sequence is going to be denoted by x tilde here. So this x hat is the state. This is going to be known at both the transmitter and receiver. This is the predicted value here, which is from the state. And then we're going to take the difference between the predicted and the observed. So what happens is this is the predicted value here that we know at the receiver and transmitter. This is our new observation. So we want to compute this vector, tangent vector, that'll take us from here to here. And so this is what we're going to do with the error tangent here. So we're going to use the predicted value, the new value, to generate an error. So the second thing that we're going to do here is we're going to quantize that tangent vector. Now, the first reaction, at least of me looking at this problem, is yes, another Grassmannian quantization problem. That's great. The problem is it's not actually a Grassmannian quantization problem because the tangent vector is not unit norm. It has a structure. It's orthogonal to x1, but otherwise it lives in the space orthogonal to that space. So it's a slightly different quantization problem. So we're going to quantize that tangent vector. In this paper here, what we did is we actually decomposed the tangent into two pieces, one that's a Grassmannian quantization, one that's a not a gain, it's a complex gain quantization. So that's kind of like a quality and then a direction. So we propose a code book for that, and that's what we're going to use to quantize the tangent here. And the third thing is the state update here. So this is how we actually update, we add the tangent to the predicted value. So we're going to use the geodesic for that. So what we're going to do is we're going to take the x tilde here, we're going to add the parallel transport error vector here, take a full step, and that's what we're going to get for the updated sequence here. Yeah, okay, right. So this is the state update, we're going to add the error on, and then this is the predicted value. So to predict, what we're going to do is we're going to take the difference between these two previous state vectors, and then we're going to kind of like keep going in the same direction, add that on to this x hat here, and go right here. So that's going to be our predicted value. And I should point out here that in this paper, we've simplified everything down, so we're taking a full step forward. You can probably realize that going a full step, it may not be the right thing to do. And so in some of our other work, we have actually optimized the step size, and you can optimize that over time, and there's some cool things related to that, and that appeared at ITA, that result. So this is our proposed predictor here. And so that's basically the idea here. I mean, I'm taking the geometric tools for doing things on the Grassmann manifold, and I'm going to write these interesting equations to get notions of prediction, to get notions of error update, quantize the error. And so I'm going to use all of that now to quantize a correlated sequence over time. For the simulations in this paper, we're going to use an autoregressive model, which is rather standard, though. You could do better if you used Clark-Ganz type model, which is band limited and has better prediction properties. So this is actually more of a worst case. We're going to consider the sum rate without epsilon. We're going to use zero forcing multi-user MIMO. And we're going to compare with using random vector quantization, which is essentially a good way of finding a fixed code book for different sizes. So the first result is I just wanted to point out that indeed, using this algorithm, it does result in effectively higher resolution. So this is, I forgot the parameters of the simulation here, but this is basically a 9-bit code book. The sequence is varying over time, and this is, you know, we keep quantizing it over time here. And the choral distance fluctuates because sometimes your quantized value is close to the true channel, sometimes it's far, so it's fluctuating. And then this is our approach down here, also with 9 bits. So we're getting about, you know, a factor of 5 down here. And our approach is, because we're tracking this over time and things are changing over time, we're not converging to zero because it's varying. So, but this is just to show you that indeed it does actually decrease the error in terms of average chordal distance. Now, let's look at the sum rates comparison. And so the blue curve here, this is a perfect CSI. So it's 4 users, 4 antennas. We don't have any multi-user diversity, so we didn't select the best 4 users. We just picked randomly 4 users, and they all have the same average SNR. So they're like sitting on the same circle, if you like. So here's this. The blue is the, you know, what we're trying to achieve here. That's perfect CSI. And this, I don't know what color that is. It's kind of a mustard-looking color. That is the Grassmannian IED codebook here. It's kind of a weird thing is that it turns out that there's not really good Grassmannian codebooks for large codebook sizes. So with random vector quantization, you can get more or less a Grassmannian codebook. So you can get essentially a very good codebook. It's how the geometry works. So this is actually a good codebook, a good fixed dimension codebook. You probably won't do much better than this. And here's the standard error floor result that you get. At high SNR, you're interference limited. So right here, you can see these different Doppler symbol period products here. So this 0.01, this is a very slow channel, and this is a reasonably fast channel here. So what you can see is that all with 9 bits of feedback, in effectively a slow channel, we're able to get very good performance tracking that ideal sum rate with a, you know, somewhat fast channel. We still get a little bit of improvement, but the performance improvement's is not huge. And so the nice thing is that, you know, this means that, you know, every user essentially they can be updating their. This is for all the users have the same channel profile, but the algorithm is flexible enough that, I mean, every user essentially runs their own adaptive algorithm. They predict it, they get the CSI, and if their channel happens to be slow, they have a better information. If their channel is varying fast, they get worse information. So it is actually tracking quite well. And this also includes a 5 millisecond delay, which is a standard assumption in 3GPP. So even with that delay that we're not accounting for, we still can track the sum rate with under some reasonable assumptions here. So that's essentially it here. So what I've done in this talk is I proposed a Grassmannian predictive coding framework, and this is, I think, at least from a source coding perspective, you know, the picture is nice, the story is nice. Now, there's a lot of limitations. But first of all, I'm only using the previous 2 points. I'd like to use more than that. Clearly, if I had, if I figured out how to do this with 3 or 5 previous points, I would have just shown that to you. It's hard because these tangents, all those concepts were based on 2 points. So if you have 3, you got to do something else there. And so we have some ideas, but that's proving to be very difficult. My student in his dissertation has some extension of this to Stiefel manifolds, so you can do this. We did some work with limited feedback MIMO OFDM where you had to do a Stiefel quantization instead of a Grassmann quantization. And this whole concept, it works there as well, but the feedback requirements really become high. So I'm not sure that this is exactly the right solution for higher dimensions yet, but I think it's a good idea. And then I showed you the multi-user MIMO results. Since we developed this, I have another student who graduated who has enhanced this for multi-cell MIMO, so where we actually predict the channels from interfering base stations using a similar concept, but she was actually able to come up with, frankly, a much better predictor. And that result's going to be appear at ICC. And then I have another result where we've also come up with a better predictor for interference alignment, and that's going to appear at USIPCO. So the concept I think is good, and I still think there's a lot of work to be done here. Okay, so that's it. I apologize for not taking enough time. And this is not my virus. Oh, I took exactly the right amount of time. Excellent. All right.
Yeah, thank you for this excellent introduction, motivation to work on the Grassmannian manifold. Are there questions?
What do you know?
I needed to give back to you. So how dependent is this method on how you model this time correlation?
It's not really very dependent. So in the journal version, which we actually just submitted the journal version recently, and it should be on archive today or tomorrow. And we have simulations with other temporal, like multi-tap AR models, and it still works well. So we're not really exploiting any knowledge about the channel correlation. You could probably come up with a correlated channel model that makes the algorithm work poorly, I suspect. But we're not using, you know, we don't have the correlation function anywhere. There was no MM, right? I mean, we'd like to have that, but we're not exploiting that yet.
So you're not exploiting how fast it is moving?
Right. I mean, it's only coming, see, the speed, it's really only coming when we quantize the magnitude of the tangent vector. So if the channel is varying slowly, what's going to happen is we're going to take, I don't know where the quantize thing here. Well, when we quantize this, so we quantize the direction and the magnitude effect of the tangent vector. So when it's varying slowly, we're going to take a small step. And when it's varying quickly, we're going to take a larger step. So that's the only place where the correlation comes in. Now, in the other paper I mentioned, where we adapt the step size, there the statistics come in, but not in a straightforward way.
Thanks.
Further questions?
There's one in the back. This is not a speaker. Good. All right.
So my question is if these Grassmannian vectors, I mean, is it really the best representation of the information that you want to convey? Can't you do something else? I mean, why do you have to stick to unit length vectors?
Can you repeat the last part? I didn't.
Do you really have to stick to unit length vectors? You could just as well represent the direction by some vector that's not normalized in length.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So I mean, the question is, whether you need the unit length vectors or not. So the thing is that remember that this vector that lives on the Grassmann manifold, not only is it unit length, it's also phase invariant. So those two properties, it pulls out degrees of freedom of the vector. So if you have a complex vector with n entries, you have 2n parameters. If it's unit norm, you have 2n minus 1. If it's phase invariant, you have 2n minus 2. So the whole reason that we use this on the Grassmann manifold is so that we quantize less information. And you can show from the point of view of capacity or probability of error that all you need is this normalized direction information. Now, if you want to quantize the direction as well with the CQI, then actually you're back to 2n minus 1. And so if you wanted to combine those together, you could do that, and you would end up with something different. But still you'd have the phase invariance. So it wouldn't be like a random vector, a Gaussian. It still wouldn't be a Gaussian problem, but it would be on a different manifold.
Right, but does it really matter in this context? I mean, you want to get some epsilon update in each step, and does it matter if after a while it is no longer unit length? And I mean, you don't care about the length and the phase anyway.
Okay. So I can give you another answer to this question here. So one thing that you could do is Grassmann manifold is a Riemannian manifold. It's locally Euclidean. So in fact, you could use kind of a standard predictor, and then you could add them up, and you'd get a point not on the manifold. And then you could, if you need a unit norm, you can project it back to the manifold. And indeed, that works if you're operating in a local enough region. And so we found that, and actually the analysis in the journal version of this paper makes that, it's like a small angle assumption. But if you have more variation, the problem is that that addition and projection gets you further away from this kind of addition operation. So I think there's actually a case for doing that too. It just depends. The approach that we've taken in this ICC paper actually has a better predictor that doesn't predict on the Grassmann manifold, but we do updates on the Grassmann manifold. So I think your point is well taken. Okay? So,
okay,
coffee,
thank
break?
Thank you very much, right. And thanks to all speakers in the session.